KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, we explore what it takes to be a modern-day clown with Bay Area author and San Francisco Clown Conservatory founder Jeff Raz. His book, The Secret Life of Clowns, takes us backstage at Cirque du Soleil and shares the excitement, fear, hard work, and delight of being a clown. Then at 10:30, it's summer break for kids, but for parents, it's anything but. Only about a quarter of U.S. families have one parent at home while school's out, and that can mean added stress and expense, raising the question, would we be better off getting rid of summer holiday? Tell us, do you dread or cherish summer break? That's all next on Forum. Join us. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, you're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Joining me in studio is Jeff Raz. He co-founded the Clown Conservatory, a professional clown training program in San Francisco, and he's worked with the influential Pickle Family Circus and played a starring role in Cirque du Soleil's Corteo. Raz's new book is called The Secret Life of Clowns, a backstage tour of Cirque du Soleil and the Clown Conservatory. And he's here to answer your questions about modern-day clowning and what goes on behind the scenes when you're under the big top. Welcome to Forum, Jeff Raz.
Thank you, Mina. Nice to be here.
What distinguishes a clown from, say, a street performer or a juggler or somebody who's out there, you know?
You listed three of my professions, so because I started as a street juggler in Berkeley. There's the lines blur, and if you're like me, you're in the business, you don't worry about those lines too much. But to answer that question as best I can, clowns, the basic job of a clown is connecting, is making connections. So when we're with an audience, we're connecting directly with that audience. And if we're doing our job really well, that audience feels connected. We're a little community in the tent or even on the street. So a street juggler, when I started, I was pretty sure that a street juggler needed to be as cool as possible and throw as many things in as many cool ways. And I really wanted the audience to go, oh, wow, he's good. A clown is a little different. If you're using skills, which you can be using juggling, acrobatics, singing, dancing, whatever skill you can grab, you want to do that in service of connecting with other human beings, the other clowns on the stage, the audience.
So what makes a good clown?
I'm working for the Smithsonian right now. We were just talking about the setting up for this circus arts festival, the Folklife Festival.
Yeah, at the end
and
of this month.
What makes a good clown's really been a question we've been talking about for a year. Of course, completely subjective because clowning can be many, many different things in many different cultures. If you're asking me, though, what I'm looking for is, am I sitting there with a big smile on my face and falling in love with this person?
The costume that a clown tends to wear, it feels like there are a lot of evolutions of it, but traditionally it's been this red nose, white face paint, big shoes. What do you think of that caricature, that costume of clowns, and do you think it's still very relevant?
Well, you're hitting all the tough clown questions right off the bat. The costuming is really interesting. And again, I'm going to answer your question a little elliptically, and I apologize for that. Yes, big shoes help because it changes your walk. And if you walk in a different way, you're kind of a different person. They also can look funny. A red nose, you're looking at me right now. You see, I got a big nose. There's a big old nose here in the middle of my face. So if I stick a red nose on it, it's not the most perfect look. So I haven't used a red nose very much. However, there are some clowns, when that nose goes on, just everything somehow comes together and they are electric in a different way. There's clowns in just about every culture and just, you know, as far as I can tell, almost every culture has some version of clowning and there's always some costume. Because you are separate. You are you're different than the normal. However, you're also connected with the normal. So the things you mentioned, which is the big shoes, perhaps a baggy clothes or very tight clothes, the nose, somehow changing my appearance gives me that otherness that can sometimes make a deeper connection.
Well, your book, The Secret Life of Clowns, could I ask you to read something from that book for us. I know you've selected a couple of passages to give us a sense of what it is that you wanted to convey about clowns through this book. And if you would mind just setting up the passage that you'd like to read.
Absolutely. So the book has two fictional narratives, one of a student, a first person from a student who's going through clown school, a year of clown school, and the other's from his teacher on the road with Cirque du Soleil. And it comes from the time that I spent where I was on the road with Cirque du Soleil, and I was running a clown school. So this comes from the part on Corteo, which is the show I was on. And I think the only important thing to know is that the tapis rouge, which I mentioned in here, is a little part of the backstage that has a television and a three couches. And the performers during the show would tend to watch their favorite acts on a live feed. Along with the beautiful new Corteo program, new jugglers have arrived to learn the show. The current jugglers are from Russia, three brothers and a sister. They do an act that their parents polished for years before passing it down a generation, a 40-year-old juggling routine performed by 20-somethings. The audience loves it. I do too. But the Russians are leaving, and four teenagers from the Ukraine are here to take their place. Watching the newbies rehearse, I can see that they are all solo jugglers who were thrown together for this job. Their routine is not at the level of the current act. The artistic director has been rehearsing with them hard, but the Russian family will continue performing until the young Ukrainians are up to speed. It might be a while. One of the new jugglers, a lanky, awkward 19-year-old who looks like a schoolboy next to the sleek, buff acrobat. Even with my very limited Russian, I can tell he's being teased relentlessly. In the middle of the Friday night show, watching the Russian family doing their juggling act on the live feed in the tapis rouge, I look up to see this young juggler standing in the middle of the artistic tent throwing five juggling clubs in a perfect pattern. The music is playing, the Russian family is performing on stage, and the Ukrainian is backstage juggling five clubs. One at a time, everyone in the artistic tent turns to watch him. The five clubs stay in the air, a blur set to the rhythm of the handles slapping on his hands as he catches. Doing five clubs for a full minute is a feat I've never made it past 15 seconds, and he's had the clubs up in the air for over 5 minutes already. The music stops. The Russian family exits into the artistic tent. They glance at the young juggler as they run to their dressing rooms. Once they've passed, the Ukrainian calmly catches the five clubs, turns, and walks away. We all exhale. Saturday afternoon, when I come in to stretch before the first show, I see the five-club wonder bouncing on the trampoline. He looks like Ichabod Crane getting thrown from his horse with elbows flying and butt sticking out in a strange angle. I think, what are you doing? Yesterday, you carefully choreographed some respect, and now you look like a fool in front of everyone. Sure enough, a couple of acrobats sidle over to the trampoline to loudly comment in English on his awful technique. Rather than getting pissed or stopping, he asks for some advice on his trampoline technique. This only gets him another round of sarcastic remarks. He bounces on. Every day for the next week, he bounces on the trampoline, and every day the same acrobats tease him. But by the next weekend, the buff and beautiful are also giving Ichabod advice, which he immediately takes. Sunday, after the final show of the week, as I'm scooting out to catch the first shuttle back to the hotel, there he is, bouncing away. He looks a little less awkward.
Jeff Raz, reading from The Secret Life of Clowns, a backstage tour of Cirque du Soleil and the Clown Conservatory. I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation. What have you ever wanted to ask a clown or know about clowning? You can give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, on Facebook, on Twitter, at kqedforum, or you can email us. This morning's email address is kqedtalk@gmail.com. So, Jeff Raz, what goes into training a clown? Like, what are the basic elements they need to learn?
That was what I started thinking of in 1999 when I first started thinking about the Clown Conservatory. The challenge was, what do you do if you actually are going to take students through a whole process, a year or 2 years? And there are many answers. One that I came up with is you have to do a lot of shows. And the reason is just what we were talking about earlier, this connection with the audience. So my students did their first show 5 weeks into their term, and they were never happy about it because they had very little to offer at that point. And I would say that to the audience, much to my students' chagrin. I would say, we don't have much to offer you. We've only been working 5 weeks, but you have a lot to offer us because the students need to get the connection with the audience, even if they're not even perfecting or even getting the basic tricks. There are ideas. There's a history. So there's a canon of clown material. There's Commedia dell'arte, which is a 16th century Italian form, which influenced a lot of modern European clowning. There are lots of the skills surrounding it, everything from music to mime to acrobatics to dance. And those need to be learned to be able to speak circus. A clown needs to be able to speak circus. You have to be able to talk to the band. If you're not an acrobat, still interface with the acrobats.
In your book, you write that it's half comedy, half tragedy. What does that mean? Why tragedy? Yeah,
that line is actually from one of my teachers, Carlo Mazzoni Clemente, who started Dell'Arte International, where I went to school and I still visit often. The idea, he said, was comedy is 51% comedy, 49% tragedy. Now, Carlo didn't go and explain those little sayings. So over the years, I've come to understand that means if it's pure comedy, it'll be funny, but people aren't going to love you and they're not going to be moved. But if you get some of the tragedy in there, it will move people and they'll laugh. And with my students, I would often see something and I'd say, okay, that's 75% comedy. That's great. We can work with that. We'll just get a... But often I'd see something that wasn't funny at all. I'd say, oh, beautiful. You got 60% tragedy, 40% comedy. We can work with that. If it's zero tragedy, it's a little harder to make it sing, make people sing with it.
Because you're not connecting, I think, as you were saying earlier,
yeah,
such
well
a big
said.
Part of it. Is circus or clowning a realistic career these days? I mean, Ringling Brothers closed down last month.
After 146 years,
yeah,
and a bunch of jobs went with it. I was just talking to a clown, Peggy Williams, who has worked for Ringling for 46 years. So big changes for her. Yes, it is. There are lots of places, but they're not necessarily the places that I saw. I have ex-students who are working, of course, with Cirque du Soleil. Of course, they're working in many of the smaller circuses. Circus Bella, right here in the Bay Area, who is going to be featured at the Smithsonian. I just have to throw that in. But in hospitals, medical clowning, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of professional medical clowns in the country. In theater, in burlesque, in puppetry. I have to tell you, one of my ex-students now is a big data analyst. And I said, okay, you are not using any of your training. And he looked at me and said, oh, no, I am. I said, okay, wait a second, big data. He says, I'm the only one who can go to Washington, D.C. and sit at a table with the IT geeks and the FBI spooks, and I'm the only one who can talk to both of them. So I'm at every meeting because of clown school.
Well, let's hear from some of our listeners. Jaime from Sonoma. Hi, Jaime.
Hey, hablo, Jaime. You guys speak English or Spanish? What are you doing today?
I'm going to go with English. Thank you for the offer.
And thank you for your work. You know, I'm an old man, and I've done clowning for psychophysiotherapy all my life.
Wow. Tell me more.
Well, I met up with a great old curandero in northern Mexico, and we did house calls. And he wouldn't do his English, and I tried to do my Spanish. But we went from one house to the other, one church to the other for a while. And depending on how we could get the kids to help the grandparents do their physical therapy.
You would.
And that was a while ago. I'm still trying to reinvent that here in Sonoma County with horses and dogs and family and friends.
Well, Jaime, thanks so much for the call. I really appreciate it.
Wow.
And that he reminds me actually of what you were saying in terms of you have the Medical Clown Project where you go and you try to do performances in hospitals for people who are maybe not in the mood to.
Right. And then we actually try not to call them performances because they often aren't a performance. They're often, like Jaime was mentioning, an interaction, something to to create connection and lower stress.
You know, clowns have this intersection of delight and fear often associated with them. How have you addressed that intersection, which I imagine you've come across when you've done your work at hospitals and other places?
First of all, I have to say no one else gets to see what you were doing with your fingers there with this delight and fear connecting. Frankly, we get 99% delight, but there is sometimes there's fear. I'll tell you two quick stories. One, we were working on an adult unit at California Pacific Medical Center, and this was a number of years ago, so we were just starting. And the elevators happened to open right onto the nursing station. And the elevators open. I was in full costume. And I look out, and this nurse looks at me and goes, "I hate clowns. I'm scared of them." And I said, "Oh, me too." I completely agree. And we had this little conversation about how much she was scared of clowns. Every day that we were there, once a week, for 6 months, we had the same conversation. She was serious, too. She hated clowns, but she was willing to talk to me about it. So this is the basic answer is you look for the connection wherever it is. I'll tell you another one with a kid, which was there was a in the pediatric unit, maybe a three-year-old was sitting with her mom and walked by, looked in and asked permission. I didn't actually ask permission, but my eyes, and the kid screamed. And the mother went, "Come on in," which you go with a scream. So I left. I kept walking back and forth. Every time I went by, I did a hat trick, but it didn't look in the room. And every time the scream was there, but a little less. I left my hat when I left the unit, and I went back to get my hat. And the nurse, the head nurse, was going, "Where have you been?" I said, "I had to go on." She handed me the hat and said, "There's a kid who needs you." And this kid had just decided after a while, "Oh, this is okay. Just need a little time." And I couldn't get the kid off my leg for another 20 minutes. But that's how we deal with that.
Well, I think you've answered Carly's question. Carly from Berkeley wanted to know how you deal with people who are afraid of clowns. Let's hear from our caller, Tom from Los Gatos. Hi, Tom.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I was listening to Seth MacFarlane do the interview right after the passing of Adam West. And Seth MacFarlane says people always ask him if there are drugs lying around the set of Family Guy. And his quote was, "We don't have drugs. We have Adam West." And I think that's really a serious point. I think the endorphins that are released in, say, children at a hospital really will make them feel much better without the actual drugs.
There's actually some research finally getting done on medical clowns that show that lowering of cortisol levels, the stress hormone. Not just children. We work a lot with folks who have dementia. That's become sort of a specialty of the Medical Clown Project. And the kind of rootedness that can happen even with someone with dementia after they have played, gone to an imaginary play space and come back to their reality is striking.
Well, thanks so much for the call, Tom. I appreciate it. Where is the clown profession going? One of the things that I've heard you say is that while losing Ringling is a loss, that it could open doors for new innovative clowning or others could emerge or get more of the spotlight. What specifically are you talking about?
Well, I'm certainly talking about some of the smaller circuses. Before Ringling was on the railroads, and we're talking about many, many years ago, there were small circuses all over the country, regional small circuses, and that's starting to happen again. And I think that's a beautiful way for clowns to work. It's where I started, Pickle Family Circus, Make a Circus here in the Bay Area. I also think that clowns are moving out into many, many other disciplines. One of my ex-students is doing a show on a boat right now, site-specific, working in dance, working in theater. As I said, working in burlesque. One of my ex-students has got a career as a burlesque clown. I'm a little bit too embarrassed to go see her, but she's doing really well at it. So I think that's what it is, using the same creativity you do in rehearsal when you're working on your business end to try to figure out what am I going to do next.
What does diversity in the clown profession look like right now?
Much better than it did. Much better. When I was running my school, I was really concentrated that we're going to have a class of students every year that's going to look like their audiences and look like the Bay Area, because that's where we are, but also look like the country. My last class was all women except for one man. So in terms of gender diversity, that's happening. In terms of cultural diversity, thank God we have places like Universe Soul, which is the only African-American owned and operated circus in the world, and they're going to be featured at the Smithsonian. I just got a call this morning from Onion Head, who's one of their head clowns. And there's a long way to go. Let's be real, just with, as with every part of our community. But with clowning, it's imperative because we've got to reflect the people we're with. Clowns always have. We're part of our community. So if we're not really part of our community, not so good.
We're talking with Jeff Raz, author of The Secret Life of Clowns, a backstage tour of Cirque du Soleil and the Clown Conservatory. He toured with Cirque du Soleil's Corteo and co-founded the Clown Conservatory, which was the only professional clown training program when it was founded, and it's here in San Francisco. Jeffy writes, thanks for your art. To Cirque du Soleil and clowns in general, thanks to all of you for helping us lift out of ourselves to laugh and delight and gasp in wonder.
Oh, I wish I had written that line. Thank you. I'm going to put that in my next book. That was lovely.
Ben writes, what does your guest think about the current surge in interest in creepy clowns? Has it shaped his own routine? And then, yes, creepy clowns. I mean, there was, it might be fun now, but certainly late last summer, it was not fun. You heard stories about like machete wielding clowns or clowns that were trying to lure children into the woods.
I got a lot of calls, as you might imagine, from folks and from media about that. And I finally thought, my stock answer was, if folks had dressed up as dinosaurs and wielded that, no one would have called the paleontologists. They would know the difference between a fake dinosaur and a real dinosaur. But with clowns, it's legitimately more fluid. It's not as clear. But those folks are not clowns. Let's be really clear. Mm-hmm. Those are folks who put on a pop culture image of clowns and hurt people, which is the exact opposite of what professional clowns do, which is connect people.
Well, let me see if I can squeeze in one call before we have to let you go. May from Concord. Hi, May.
Hi. I just wanted to say hi to Jeff. He came to my high school class back in the early 2000s at Lowell High School and to my drama class to teach us Commedia dell'arte. And I still remember a lot of what he taught us and the different skills and how the characters walk. And today, even when I'm playing with my son to make him laugh, I use a lot of what he taught me.
You're just about making me cry, May. That's great. I loved working at Lowell. That was a really lovely time.
If someone wants to enter the profession, what advice do you give?
Well, luckily, the Clown Conservatory is up and running again. Sarah Moore is running it. They had their first year of the new, and it's wonderful. So the Clown Conservatory, Dell'Arte International, my alma mater, great school, and watching clowns live. Yes, watch them on YouTube. Watch Lucille Ball, watch Laurel and Hardy, but watch them on YouTube. Watch them live and see what you love.
Well, Jeff Raz, I really appreciate you being with us this morning.
Thank you.
Jeff Raz, clown instructor, author of The Secret Life of Clowns, and the Smithsonian event coming up
June 29th, in D.C. And you can order the book at secretlifeofclowns.com.
Thanks so much. Up next, we'll be talking about the summer childcare crunch. Stay with us. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum.